Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, we're going to be doing part one of a two-part mailbag, so make sure you join the Buha's Block Discord if you want to submit future mailbag questions. I will be doing a mailbag soon from YouTube, but make sure you join the Discord. I'm always posting when I'm going live. It's also free, so if you never want to miss anything, make sure you are there. But without further ado, let's get into it. All right, first question from Jord Santiago. What are the boxes the ideal Lakers center needs to check? Would you settle for a center who can't check some of those boxes? And which of those are you fine leaving off? I think this is one of the most important questions of the Lakers offseason because LA has two glaring needs, a new starting center and a new starting two-way wing, and how they go about plugging those two holes, what characteristics, what traits, what skill sets, what archetypes they prioritize are going to be vital in terms of their ability to compete with the league's best teams next season. And so with the center spot specifically, I want to keep it relatively simple here, and I want to prioritize three general things. First and foremost, they have to be a defender of a certain level. I've recently, and frankly throughout the season, talked about the limitations with DeAndre Ayton as a rim protecting center. Whichever center the Lakers add, whether it's someone in free agency, whether it's someone they trade for, maybe it's someone they draft for, whoever it is, they need to be able to protect the rim, protect the paint, and be an interior force on the defensive end. So that to me is the most important trait, because we're going to get into the stretch five skill set and why that's become so important recently. But even within that, all of the bigs that teams have won championships with or had a lot of success with have been high level rim protectors or had awesome perimeter defenses. And I think it's going to be tough for LA to build out this just awesome perimeter defense with their available avenues to improve the roster, unless they're making a drastic change and sign and trading Austin Reeves, or LeBron won't be back and then they have some additional cap space there. Like, barring a bigger change to the top of the roster, there is going to be a limitation there defensively. I think it's going to be imperative that the big man can protect the rim, protect the paint at a certain level. So that is my most important trait by far. Second thing would be rebounding. If we take the four teams that made the conference finals and just use them as a blueprint here, if you look at Karl Anthony Towns, Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein, Victor Wembanyama, and Jarrett Allen, DeAndre Ayton was a worse rebounder than all five of those players. So the Lakers need to also address the rebounding, the defense rebounding. I think about that stretch at the beginning of the fourth quarter of game three, where the Lakers give up multiple offensive rebounds and they're in the thick of the game and they cannot get a defensive rebound to save their life. They're playing great defense for 20 seconds, then they cannot finish the possession. So I thought that was an issue for LA at times. It was an issue for them at times in the Houston series. They definitely missed Luka Doncic. He's one of the best rebounding guard in the NBA, one of the best rebounding wings in the NBA, depending on how you want to classify him. They certainly missed him with his defensive rebounding, but I also think the center spot needs to be a better rebounder than DA. So I start with the defense, I start with the rebounding, and then the third and final thing is being a pick and roll partner with Luka Doncic. Ideally, that is a high level lob threat. We've seen the success with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, and then this past season with DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes. Like, if you have a big man who can figure out the tango with Luka, the 1-2 step, and get behind the defense and be a lob threat, be a presence at the rim, be someone who can catch the ball and finish and dunk. Of course, you would love to have a big who can be a lob threat, be a short roll threat as both a shooter and a playmaker, and also be a big who can pick and pop. That is a difficult skill set to find. If you can find that, I think there is value in that. But most of the bigs we're talking about are one or the other. Like a Mitchell Robinson and a Robert Williams are going to be the lob threats. A Kristaps Porzingis and a Miles Turner are going to be the pick and pop threats. If you give Miles Turner or Kristaps Porzingis a wide open dunk opportunity, they can catch a lob and finish, but they're not going to be dunking on people. And Robert Williams did expand his jumper this past season and show some stretch capabilities, but I don't know if that's something you want to exactly rely on. And I think there is still somewhat of a limitation there with him as like a pick and pop threat. So it's going to be difficult to find a big who checks all of those boxes in terms of every level of the pick and roll attack with Luka, but it is important, in my opinion, that they are at least a lob threat, if not a threat at least two of the three levels, which I would say is like, you know, at the rim, in the middle of the floor, you know, paint, kind of elbow area, and then also spacing out. So those would be my three things: defense, rebounding, and pick and roll chemistry with Luka, Austin, LeBron. Now, if I'm ranking those three things, I would probably go defense first, lob threat slash pick and roll chemistry second, and rebounding third, because I think, especially if the Lakers are retaining LeBron, you have a pretty strong rebounding base with LeBron and Luka. Austin's a solid rebounder for a guard. And then ideally you add in that other two-way player who's a strong rebounder. And ideally it's close to a 33.3, 33.3, 33.3 split. But if I had to prioritize them in some form or fashion, I would go defense first, lob threat, pick and roll chemistry second, and then rebounding third. Notice I did not mention shooting and stretch five capability. And I know that this is the in vogue skill set right now. If you look at three of the four conference finalists, they employ a center who can space the floor: Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and Karl-Anthony Towns. You could even look at OKC's bench, and Jalen Williams was out there for key moments in game seven, and he's a floor spacing big. So that is an important skill set. You could even look at the last 10 champions, or most of the last 10 champions have employed some form of a stretch big. 2025 OKC had Chet and Jalen Williams. 2024 Boston had Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford. 2023 Denver had Jokic. It was one of his best shooting stretches of his career. 2022 Golden State had Draymond at the five, where he's not the level of shooter that the rest of these guys are, but he can space out when they go to smaller groups and hit threes. 2021 Milwaukee had Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis. 2020 Lakers had AD. 2019 Raptors had Marcus Gasol and Serge Ibaka. 2018 and 17 Warriors also had Draymond at the five. And then the 2016 Cavs didn't often put Kevin Love at the five, but he could technically play a stretch five. So you go back over the last decade of NBA history and champions and what has worked to a degree, there has been some success with having stretch bigs. And that, to me, is intriguing when you think about a Kristaps Porzingis or a Miles Turner and their potential fit in LA. I would argue that of all of the names I just listed, like, this current version of Miles Turner is not as good as any of the guys I just mentioned, with the exception of Draymond. I think he's a better shooter than Draymond, right? But when you're talking about just overall, he's not as good as Chet or Cat or Wemby, if we look at this season. But going back, like, Chet, that version of Porzingis to me was better. But Jokic and Draymond and Brooke Lopez — Brooke Lopez was still a Defensive Player of the Year candidate back then — AD, Gasol, Ibaka, like, I think Turner's a bit below. Like, maybe some of those guys you could argue that he's relatively close to, but I don't think people realize how much he slipped last season in Milwaukee. And even had a shaky postseason at times during the Pacers finals run. Like, he was a part of their success, but they did sometimes succeed in spite of Miles Turner's limitations, particularly as a rebounder. But his shot also came and went throughout that postseason run. So I'm a bit lower on Miles Turner. I don't think he is quite good enough defensively for what the Lakers need. He's certainly not the rebounder that the Lakers need. And I don't even know if he's the stretch big that the Lakers need. That also warps how the pick and roll game works with Luka Doncic. I think Khalil Ware in Miami is raw, and a lot of people are looking at the body type, the skill set, the potential, some of the big performances he's had. I don't know if he's ready to be a full-time starting center on a contender, but that's someone who intrigues me with his floor spacing capabilities, the athleticism, the length, the finishing, and also the defense and the rebounding. Like, maybe that is a potential option with Porzingis. There are similar lob threat and rebounding concerns. There's also the complicated, we'll say, history with Luka, but there's also his injury history recently, and there's no guarantee that Kristaps Porzingis can play more than 50 games. So sure, would it be great to add a stretch five? Yes. Is that player out there? Is there a player who can space, like even if we put the pick and roll lob threat part to the side, if we say prioritize a stretch big, okay, is there a stretch big who could also defend and rebound on a high level? I don't know. Like with Turner and Porzingis, it's not the rebounding. And I think they're a little overrated defensively based on their size and based on their shot blocking numbers. And then with Khloe Ware, I think he's still a bit raw. And maybe a year from now, a couple years from now, he could be the center that the Lakers need. But if we're looking at can they contend next season with some of these teams, I don't know if he's quite ready for that. Outside of that, it's not Nikola Vucevic. It's not Brook Lopez. Please show me if you can show me the center that Robert Williams, maybe I got, but he's also got to stay healthy. Like show me the big that can do all the things the Lakers need plus space the floor. And if the Lakers can find that guy, I think he'd be a great fit. I would not want to leave off any box though, to be completely honest. And that's why most of the bigs I'm looking at, like for example, a Walker Kessler, I think checks all three of these boxes. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league, one of the best rebounders in the league, and also a dominant finisher in the paint and a lob threat. Derek Lively is someone who's had success with Luka Doncic, including that 2024 finals run. Jalen Duren, I think I have some questions about his defense, but he's a high-level rebounder, he's a high-level finisher, and he's also just 22 years old, just made third team All-NBA, so you are betting on the upside there and him figuring things out in the playoffs. I think another couple of interesting examples would be Jarrett Allen and Nick Claxton. I think both those guys get close to checking all three boxes. They certainly check the lob threat box. They're not as strong of rebounders as I would want, but they're at similar levels, if not better, than DA. And I also think defensively, there's a versatility there with some of the switchability or the rim protection, and they're both better defenders. But in summation, I would say rim protection, rebounding, and being a lob threat are my three priorities if I'm the Lakers. If you can find a big who can do those things and space the floor, I think that's the cherry on top. But I don't think it's a prerequisite just based on how LA's offense functions. And they had such a high level offense with DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes as their two rim runners and lob threats. If you can upgrade that spot with guys who are better defensively and better on the glass, I think it just makes you a more well-rounded operation. And Luka can succeed with a pick and pop big. I just don't think you need a pick and pop big. Next question from Kane. Who is someone that the Lakers haven't been linked to that you would like the Lakers to acquire this offseason? Well, it depends if we're talking about players they've been linked to via reporting or players they've been linked to via fans, because fans have linked the Lakers to just about everybody. So I feel like I can't come up with a name that someone has not mentioned in a hypothetical trade, whether it's a question on here or a fake trade on X. But going off of the reporting or guys they've been linked to have interest in, or guys that I've heard they have interest in, I would say they've had interest in these guys before, but either of the Dallas bigs, particularly Derek Lively, that's someone that I would invest first round draft capital in. I would easily give up a first round pick to go get Derek Lively. I think he'd be a great fit running it back with Luka in LA. So I understand the complex nature of the dynamic between the Lakers and the Mavericks. And I don't think Mavericks fans would love if the Lakers and Mavericks made another trade, especially for someone like Lively. But that would be someone that I would be very interested in. To a lesser degree, Daniel Gafford. I think it just depends on what that price would be. A couple other names would be Nick Claxton, who is someone the Lakers have previously had interest in. But I think if you can't get one of the RFAs, I think if some of the guys like an Isaiah Hartenstein or Jared Allen, if those guys aren't part of cost-cutting moves from OKC and Cleveland respectively, then as you start to go down the list of available centers that check the boxes of what the Lakers need, I think Nick Claxton would be someone I would still be interested in, again, depending on the price. Quickly going through the standings here and thinking about players that would fit in LA, I think if you go to New York, Landry Shamet is an interesting bench option. I know he's not had a great finals, but compare him to someone like Luke Kennard, where he's had an awesome postseason shooting wise, but has also been a point of attack defender and held his own in the backcourt defensively for New York, has closed a ton of games for the Knicks, was closing a ton of those games in the Cleveland series in the Eastern Conference Finals. So I think he's someone that, for example, like I would rather have than a Luke Kennard. So Landry Shamet is a name that has not been mentioned with the Lakers. If you go to Cleveland, I like Keon Ellis as a potential minimum candidate or as a guy that's just a little bit above the minimum. I know Cleveland invested in him, but it didn't quite work out during the playoff run with him. So he's someone I would be interested in. Jalen Suggs is another name that if Orlando is in a situation where they feel like they need to shed some salary and it's not, you're not going to dump Paolo Banchero or Franz Wagner. Desmond Bane is someone you just invested a lot of draft capital in. So that I think once you get into that, like Jalen Suggs, Wendell Carter Jr. territory, I'd be interested in either one of those guys as a potential starter for the Lakers longer term. I think Suggs would fit in nicely next to Luka and Austin. I think Wendell Carter isn't my favorite candidate for the long-term center spot, but could be a strong center candidate over the next couple of years. Kelly Oubre is a name that I've become more intrigued by, like not my first pick to be a starter for LA. Like ideally he's a bench guy, but if we're talking about running it back versus adding Kelly Oubre, I'd rather add Kelly Oubre. And then if we shift toward the West, I think Dylan Brooks would be someone who would be great to acquire. I don't think he's going to be available. I think Phoenix is going to try to run it back and build off of what they did last season. But if there was a way to acquire Dylan Brooks with some draft capital, I would be open to that. Otherwise, Utah, Lauri Markkanen is someone who I think would be a great fit next to Luka. Keegan Murray, as Talk Franco mentioned him earlier in the week, he's someone who I think would be a solid fit. And New Orleans, I mean, they have plenty of guys, but Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, I think, have been linked to the Lakers enough where I don't think those guys qualify as guys you wouldn't necessarily have on the Lakers radar. And then there's the Clippers with Derrick Jones Jr. and Chris Dunn. Those guys have been linked to the Lakers by fans a lot, but have not officially been reported as guys that the Lakers have on their radar or guys that the Clippers have interest in necessarily trading or getting off of. So those are some of the names of guys that I think could move the needle to a degree, depending on some of those guys are starting level guys. Some of those guys are mid to high level bench guys, but that's an assortment of players that have not explicitly been linked to the Lakers that I think could either be available via free agency with the cap space the Lakers will have, or could be available on the trade market. And if I'm the Lakers, I'd be interested in all of those guys, depending on the contract or the trade cost. Next one's from Bowen. Given the contrast between the Knicks' performance in the regular season versus the success they have achieved in the playoffs, what lessons are applicable for the 2026-27 iteration of the Lakers with Luka and AR as the core? I'm really struck by how the Knicks have really elevated. They play as a team as well as for individuals on the team. I'm also struck by how they developed this team through trades versus building the roster from the draft. That last point especially is important because the Knicks build to me is far more replicable than the Spurs build or the Thunder build. The Lakers, as Rob Pelinka reminded us at exit interviews last month, are not this team that's going to build through the draft. They don't have, like, they already have the guy you want to try to acquire in the draft, right? Like the reason you tank is to get a Luka Doncic. They have the Luka Doncic. He's about to enter his prime years. So they already have that part down. The issue is they got to get the rest of the supporting cast and they need to put the right pieces around Luka Doncic. But they are not going to be having top five picks to draft guys like Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper or Chet Holmgren, or lottery picks to draft guys like J-Dub or Kayson Wallace. So because of that, the Lakers are going to have to operate primarily through trade and free agency. And with how free agency works in the modern day, you can, like once in a blue moon, acquire a high impact free agent. But for the most part, it's going to be guys $20 million or less, which if you have the right level of pro scouting and you have the right fit, the right system, maybe some of those guys can pop and outperform those contracts. But for the most part, those are like fringe starter / high level bench guys, which do help. And the Lakers could use more of those types. But I think right now, if they're losing LeBron, they need a number three or even a number two who slots Austin as a number three. Or if they're keeping LeBron, I still think they need to upgrade those number four and number five spots on the roster. And if you had a situation where you have Luka, LeBron, and Austin, you have a new number four, a new number five, and then you have like Rui and Marcus as your six and your seven, that to me is a much stronger top seven compared to what the Lakers had. And the way to do that is going to be, can you make some trades and can you leverage teams being up against the first apron, up against the second apron, you having the cap space to acquire players if a team just wants to dump them, and you also having draft assets if you need to incentivize teams to get off of some of those contracts. So I agree that the way that the Lakers build their version of what the Knicks have, or just their version of a contender, is more likely to come via trade than free agency. I think if they just go the free agency route, whether it's with the cap space or even operating above the cap and just being like, hey, we'll use the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, I don't think you're going to get the bang for your buck that you want. I don't think you're going to add the level of difference maker to the rotation that you want. So I think the Lakers are going to have to operate as a trade team. And it might be on multiple fronts, where maybe it's trading into the cap space, but also trading out of Jared Vanderbilt, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia, Dalton Connect, some of the unwanted salaries that you have on your cap sheet. And that could be two or three separate moves, potentially. Like if you use the cap space to bring in a player or two, and then if you also swap out some of the unwanted salary you have, and then all of a sudden you could have four or five new players, a totally new starting group, totally new rotation, and be in a much better position to compete with the top of the league. So I'm with you that I think the Knicks are the way to go in terms of the blueprint for the Lakers. I also think what the Knicks have done, and I've said this now several times on this show, on Lakers Collective, on other shows that I've done interviews for, so I don't want to continue to repeat myself, but I believe in building outward from, you start with your best players, you start with your core, and you say, what are the strengths and weaknesses of these players? How can we surround them with players who help amplify their strengths and help minimize their weaknesses? And for the Lakers, if they are going with this Luka and Austin core, it needs to be defense, it needs to be athleticism, it needs to be speed, it needs to be motor, it needs to be energy. And so every player, like you start with that core, that's the starting spot. And if you're starting with that, you're starting with a ton of shot creation, scoring, playmaking, offensive firepower. Like you're going to have a top 10 offense with those two guys when they've played on the floor last season. They were the best offense in the NBA. So you have a very strong offensive base with those two guys. From that point on, though, it needs to be, how do we supplement what they need? And if you look at what New York did around Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns, it was putting the OG Anunoby, the Mikal Bridges, the Josh Hart, the Jose Alvarado, the Deuce McBride, the Landry Shamet, the Mitchell Robinson. All those guys are above average defenders for their position, for their role, and play with a certain amount of motor and energy and athleticism. And Landry Shamet maybe isn't as athletic as some of the other guys, but he makes up for it with the shooting. Deuce McBride is basically what the Lakers wanted from Gabe Vincent. Jose Alvarado, obviously, with his speed, and made some huge plays in that game four fourth quarter. Mitchell Robinson, this tough, bruising, athletic center. Like, the Knicks have all these guys who check all these athletic and defensive boxes and motor boxes that the Lakers just don't have. Like, the Lakers have a couple of those guys. They have a Marcus Smart, who's better than the Knicks bench players, not quite as good as most of the starters. Maybe he's at a similar level to a Josh Hart. But outside of that, you get down to Jake LaRavia. I don't think he's on par with any of the guys I just mentioned. And you get to a Jared Vanderbilt, who's also not on par. Like, he's better defensively, but he's not the shooter that Shamet is. He's not the ball handler that Jose Alvarado is. He's not the overall player that Mitchell Robinson is. So like, the Lakers need to upgrade those spots in the rotation. And that is the challenge this summer for LA. In terms of like the Knicks and their collective, there's obviously the background here with the Villanova connection, and this is a group that has been together to some degree for at least a year, if not a couple years. Several of these guys have been there for multiple years now. So there has been some continuity. Was a new coaching staff, so that's a new wrinkle in all of this. But to your point, like, New York is a group that seems to be greater than the sum of its parts. And so there are some things that the Lakers can really take away from this Knicks situation in terms of how to protect and support your stars and their weaknesses. Also, how a big market team that doesn't necessarily have the draft capital, have the draft assets, or have the draft patience to build through the draft can build a contender. Now, this was a multi-year process for the Knicks. This was not something that was built overnight. So I guess the counterpoint here would be, if you're the Lakers, it might be a little bit of a longer process as you try to bring in some of these longer term pieces, and might not be built by the start of the season. It would be great if it was, but might not be possible. Again, that is the task at hand for the Lakers front office this summer. Next question from USOP's publicist: would you take on Christian Brown's contract for 4 second round picks? What about one first round pick? What are the benefits with him, Luka, Austin, and possibly Braun? Yes, I would acquire Christian Braun for either of those prices. I would prefer the first round pick rather than the 4 second round picks. But for either one of those, I think it's at a high enough level where getting 4 second round picks, depending on the quality of the second round picks, you could use that to acquire other players, make other moves. And maybe instead of using a first round pick to get off Jared Vanderbilt, you could use 3 or 4 second round picks with him to get off of his contract that way. And so you could view it as potentially taking on Christian Braun and also facilitating getting off of Jared Vanderbilt or getting off of some of your unwanted salary. Between the two, I much prefer the first round pick. Now, if we look at Denver's draft assets, this is where things get tricky because the Nuggets don't have second round picks to trade. They are out of future tradable second round picks. They might be getting one back in terms of their 2033 second round pick once it's available post 2026 draft. But at most, I believe they have one tradable second round pick. They do have a couple firsts. They have the 26th pick in the 2026 draft. And then they have a future first, 2031, and then I think they will have 2033 once that pick is available to them after the draft. And so as we actually talk this through, they don't have the 4 second round picks to offer. They only have one. That would not be enough. And then if you look at the first round picks, I think if it's the 2031 or 2033, that's a no-brainer to me that you take that and you run with it. If it's the 26th pick in the 2026 draft, though, really depends on how you feel about the depth in the first round and if you would want back-to-back picks, if you'd want the 25th pick and the 26th pick and just the caliber of guys that will be there. This is supposed to be a deep draft with a strong top 25, strong top 30. But if you don't love the guys that are potentially there, I would definitely fight for the future pick and see if you could pull that off, though that pick is obviously more valuable than the 2026 pick just because you don't know where Denver is going to be in the early 2030s. To be clear here, Christian Braun would not be my first pick for the two-way wing spot. There are several guys that I would rather have than Christian Braun. But if you go back a couple of years, that 2024-25 season in which he broke out, in which he earned this 5-year, $125 million contract, he averaged 15 points and 5 rebounds, shot 58% overall, including 65% on two-pointers, and shot 40% on threes. So you look at that, like he's a year removed from being a very valuable two-way starter and defended, I think, at a higher level than he did this past season. This past season, his numbers dropped to 12 points and 5 rebounds, so the scoring was not quite there. The biggest dip was on threes. He actually shot the same percentage on twos, was right there at 65% on twos, attempted 2 fewer 2-pointers per game, and attempted 0.5 more threes per game. And you add in his 3-point dip going from 40% to 30%, and that caused his field goal percentage to drop from 58% to 52% overall. So still an efficient player from a field goal percentage and 2-point percentage perspective, still a good rebounder for a guard. And I think overall, an above average to solid defender. But the two things that would concern me would be the defensive slippage and his 3-point shooting. Now, if you look at the first 3 years of his career, he shot 35% on threes, 38% on threes, and 40% on threes. He was on an upward trajectory through his first 3 seasons. All of a sudden, forgets how to shoot for a year, shoots just 30% in the regular season, does shoot 43% in the playoffs, though. And it was a 6-game series against the Timberwolves, small sample size, but I think that player is still in there. And if he is an above average to solid defender, plus being at least a league average, if not better, shooter, and also being this athlete that can finish in transition, can finish as a cutter, is a good rebounder for his position, for his size, I think he checks several boxes. That is the contract rate? No, it's still probably somewhat of an overpay. If you look at, like, it's just kicking in this next season. So it starts at 21.5, goes up to 23, 25, 26.7, 28.5. So you are locked in with Christian Braun for the next 5 years. But especially if he can get back to defending at the level he defended at last season, and the shot rebounds, not necessarily to 40%, but let's just say 37%, 38%. That's more in line with where he was at a couple years ago. That player is still pretty valuable. And what I like about Christian Braun and his fit particularly with the Lakers, is he's been playing off of Jokic, and we've seen the shot quality that he's been able to get playing off of Jokic, whether it's in the corners or above the wings. Like, he can get the same types of shots playing next to Luka, playing next to LeBron, and to a lesser degree, playing next to Austin. So he's used to playing off of a high level passer and playmaker. And whether it's the cutting dynamic that I don't think the Lakers have had at a high enough level with some of their wings, like Christian Brown, I think would be an upgrade in that regard, but also knowing where to relocate and having reps in high leverage situations as a spot up and catch and shoot guy. Like, I think he would check a lot of those boxes. Now, defensively, I don't think he should be your best defender. I think he's more of a second best defender in terms of perimeter defenders in a grouping. So, like, longer term, that's where if you could find a four who is a versatile defender and could check a lot of the boxes, like with Denver, it was like Aaron Gordon was the best defender, and then Christian Brown is a secondary guy. If you go back to last season, like, I think that's probably the proper slotting for him, is if you have a stud versatile wing defender, then he's maybe like the primary backcourt defender, but like the secondary defender overall. Then you also have an awesome rim protector that can be a strong defensive foundation with him in there. Now, he's making a lot, and I understand that, especially as the contract ages, like as it's under 25 the first couple of years, I think it's probably fine. And if he can return to being the player he was, it's not an overpay. When you start getting into the 26, 28 range, that's where it starts to be a tougher contract to deal with. But the Lakers could potentially trade it in the future, especially if he rehabs his value. And they, I mean, the cap's going to continue to go up. It'll be a smaller portion of the cap. And the like, that's a bit of a future problem. I think for at least the next couple of years, he could check some important boxes for the Lakers. I would be looking at guys like Peyton Watson or Tari Eason in restricted free agency, or is Lu Dort potentially available, or is Jalen Suggs potentially available? I'm not as high on Lu Dort, but I understand for some people he's a better defender than Christian Brown. So if you want to make that argument, I think Brown's a better shooter, even with this past season of shooting 30%. I would trust him more as a shooter than Lu Dort. But if you want to argue for Lu Dort and his defensive capability above Christian Brown, I understand that. It also depends on what Lu Dort's next contract is going to look like. But there are several guys that I would put ahead of him. You'd obviously be helping Denver keep Peyton Watson, but the fact of the matter is they can't keep Peyton Watson without even dumping Christian Brown. Like, it's on them whether they want to pay the tax at a certain level and how deep they want to go into the second apron, but they can do that if they so choose. I don't think they're going to want to do that. I think they're going to want to get off Christian Brown or Cam Johnson. So there is going to be a desperation element from Denver here. If you've exhausted all your options and you're getting a first round pick, I think there are worse alternatives. And then final question here from Sliced Pancake. What are your thoughts on the center depth, and how realistic do you think it is for LA? Trade for Claxton, sign Robert Williams, re-sign Jackson Hayes using his cap hold. Claxton is a starter. Robert Williams adds a bit more bulk to the center depth. The reason I have him as a backup is his health concerns. Hayes comes back as a third string center who can fill in when Robert Williams or Clax are injured. I love this. I think this would be close to my dream scenario in terms of what is actually realistic. Like, of course, if you can get a Walker Kessler, a Jalen Duren, a Derek Lively, if there's a way to pry Isaiah Hartenstein from OKC, or Jared Allen, maybe. Like, there are some guys that I like a little bit more than Claxton. It's been a minute since we've seen Claxton in a competitive situation, and his numbers have dipped a bit the last couple of years. But in terms of having a three-headed approach here with Claxton, Williams, and Hayes, all three elite lob threats and finishers. To your point, Claxton offers some versatility with his switchability and would allow the Lakers to have certain groupings that could switch 1 through 5 or 2 through 5, depending on who's out there. I think that would be appealing for JJ. He also is a strong passer from the elbows, and as a DHO hub, that's one of the parts of his game that people really overlook. I'm glad you mentioned that. I think his passing could be a really important wrinkle in LA's offense. Robert Williams, I love as a backup. Don't love him as a starter because, as you pointed out, he is not someone you can rely on to play 65 plus games or play into the high 20s. So if you're playing him 18 to 22 minutes a night as a high level backup, I think that's a perfect role for him. And then Jackson, offers you a different look if one of those guys is out. And Jackson, to me, is still between an every night backup and a situational backup. And if you have him as a luxury, as your third center, I think that would make sense. And he's got the dynamic with Luka. And I mean, among realistic possibilities of how the Lakers offseason could go, I think this would be an A in terms of the center spot. I think this is about as good as it realistically gets if you can't get one of the bigger names that I mentioned. The key here will be, how are you getting Claxton and how are you getting Williams? Is a first round pick enough for Claxton? And what would that, like, is Brooklyn just looking to dump him? Are they taking back some salary in this case? And then what is Robert Williams signing for? Because if you are trading for Claxton and signing Robert Williams, I think Robert Williams is going to make at least $10 million. If not, it's been reported that he could be in that $12 to $13 million range. So for argument's sake, let's cut the Lakers a break here and say he signs for like $10 million. That is going to be part of your cap space. There's an opportunity cost here, because if you are investing this heavily in the center position and you are using about $34, $35 million in terms of cap space, that is money that you can't use on other wings. Like, maybe there's a scenario where you can dump Vando and Dalton or something onto Brooklyn in that trade. It's probably going to cost you two first round picks, one for Claxton, one to get off Vando. Maybe you could protect one of those picks and it's an unprotected pick plus a protected pick, or maybe it's a future pick with the 25th pick, something like that. But I think there's going to be a cost there to some degree to get off of that contract and to acquire Claxton. So maybe if you could get off that salary and you basically just replace the Vando and Dalton salary with Claxton, it's not the exact amount financially, so you would be taking on some money in that case, but you can still sign Williams, bring in Claxton, and have some leftover money to go pursue a wing. So I think a realistic scenario here could be, let's say you lose Rui and you lose Luke Kennard, you can maybe sign like a Kelly Oubre or something in free agency, or maybe you trade for a Lu Dort. Let's just say it's one of those two pathways. You could be going into next season with Claxton, LeBron, Dort or Oubre, Austin and Luka, and then your bench is Marcus, Robert Williams. Then you start to get into like the minimum guys, plus Jake and Jackson. So it's just worth noting that if you are investing in the center spot in terms of trading for a player and signing a player with both those guys making double digit millions, there's a downside here to that wing spot and that being of importance, but also your depth. But in terms of if we're just isolating for the center spot, I think adding Nick Claxton and Robert Williams is about as good as it gets. Again, I don't know what the price is going to be for a Claxton trade package. I don't know what the price is going to be for Robert Williams. I think it's probably going to be somewhere in that $10 to $13 million range. But I mean, there's also technically a way the Lakers could operate above the cap and do this. If you re-sign LeBron, re-sign Rui, and re-sign Luke Kennard, you could use part of the non-taxpayer MLE on Robert Williams, and then you could flip Vando and DK plus draft capital for Nick Claxton. But just know that if you are using that non-taxpayer MLE, and if you are potentially taking back more money in a trade, you are going to be hard capped at that first apron, which will be a consideration in terms of how the rest of the roster looks and how some of the guys you are re-signing in terms of their salaries, how that all looks. But that's another possibility here. You could go above the cap and do some of these moves, but you will be then hard capped at that first apron. But that'll do it for today's mailbag. I will have part two of the mailbag early next week. Appreciate you guys for watching and listening. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back next week. I'll talk to you all then.